This is MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore, and really happy now to be talking once again with old friend Paul Layton. And Paul, welcome back. You're not at the Salem News anymore, but you're still a news guy.
I still am, Rick. Yeah, thanks for having me on. We haven't talked in a while, and really looking forward to our conversation.
I am too, and it's funny, in our pregame warm-up here, I didn't realize it's been a couple of years since I've seen you in person. And maybe you want to reflect on it a little bit, because there's an anniversary coming up. You're still running, I understand.
Doing the best I can, but I'm actually running in the Fiesta Road Race tonight with my oldest daughter. We usually try to run it every year. The past few years, it's such a great event, and it's one of those. I do a few road races, and it's really fun, but the thing about Fiesta is you get that huge crowd at the finish line. It's not necessarily there to root on you or the runner specifically. You know, there's a lot of other things to do, but they all crowd around and cheer. So it's really a nice event. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, it's a special time of year. That's for sure. And do you run regularly, Paul?
Yeah, I run a couple times a week, and I kind of gear up in the summer. I always shoot for, you know, the homecoming race here in Beverly is the one I kind of gear for. But we recently did a run for the beach race in Beverly that was sponsored by Salem Sound Coast Watch. And, there's a couple couple of other races in Salem that we do. So it's fun. Yeah, I want to do it for as long as I can. I don't know how much longer that's going to be.
Yeah, right. Well, tell us about your daughter. Is she a runner as well?
Yeah, both my daughters are. So I have two daughters, Sarah and Elizabeth. They're both in their 20s, and they both ran track and cross country for Beverly High School, so they still run. That's kind of one of my motivations. I try to keep up with that. I mean, not keep up in terms of time. I can't do that, but it's something that we can do together, which is really fun, you know, and they're both teachers, Rick, which I think you would like.
Oh yeah, what do they teach?
Sarah teaches in Lynn. She teaches English second language students at an elementary school in Lynn, and Elizabeth taught at the Bentley School in Salem this past year as a permanent sub. She was sort of just trying out what teaching would be like. So. It's really nice. We need teachers, right, Rick?
Well, since I've retired, Paul, I can say this. There are several what I consider to be noble professions. I wouldn't say it while I was still teaching, because that would seem kind of weird. But teaching is definitely a noble profession. And, of course, to me, at the top of the list is nursing. So I think both of those deserve a lot of credit for keeping society together.
Totally. No, I totally agree with that. I think teaching is one of the most difficult jobs, and also one of the most important jobs. And I assume you're very rewarding too. I always tell the story, you know, a few times when my daughters were younger, and when the parents would go in at their elementary school and sort of quote unquote teach a class, like I would teach a little bit about sports writing and journalism. And Rick, I would do like a half an hour and I'd be exhausted. You know, I'm like, wow, that was hard. Never mind 6 hours.
Well,
listen, the whole day, you know?
You know, my thing is, as a high school math teacher, it's funny. I said, you know, if you're a performer, you know, a singer, a guitar player, whatever it is, you're on stage two or three times a week, maybe, with teachers at any level. But at the high school in particular, it's 5 times a day, 5 days a week. So you're on stage 25 times in a week. And the other thing I'll say, too, and I say this without reservation, the lower the grade you teach, the more money you should make. Because teaching at the high school is semi-retirement, but the lower levels, man, God bless those people who do it.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's nice of you to say. So,
All right.
All
right. Let's get down to business, because I'm not good at that kind of stuff. Paul, you know, did you retire? Now, let me ask you that first question. Did you retire from the Salem News, first of all? That's the question I want to ask. Or did you just need a break?
You know what? That's a great question. No, I would say since I had a retirement party, I would have to say that I retired. And if I didn't say I'd retired, I'd have to return any gifts I got. You know what I'm
right? Right. Okay. I got you. Yep.
No, I'm kidding. But no, I did retire, but I did it with the goal of starting up what I have started. We'll talk about the Beverly Beat, my own site. I did, I was planning on making that transition. I wasn't sure how much would be involved in this new venture and how much I would end up working. So, but I still consider it a retirement. I was in, I worked for newspapers for 40 years. Mm-hmm. And in this, even though I'm doing kind of the same thing, really, local journalism and doing the same thing, it feels totally different in a lot of ways. We can get into that too.
Yeah, let's do that, because I feel the same way in what I've been doing since I retired from teaching, but also, from the radio station. I didn't retire from the radio station. It went belly up. But aside from that, yes, tell us, first of all, about the Beverly Beat, the idea of it, what it is, and what you plan to do with it, what the goals are, and things like that.
Yeah, sure, Rick. The Beverly Beat, it's a local news website just covering the city of Beverly, written just by me. It's delivered on, the platform is called Substack, which is, it's an email, it comes in the form of an email newsletter, so people can subscribe to it, they can sign up, and every time I write a story, I send it out, and you get an email in the inbox. And I did quite a bit of research before I started, and, because I didn't know much about this, and Substack has become a big company, and a lot of, retired or laid-off journalists have started their own Substacks, their own newsletters. More famous people like Katie Couric and others have started their own, and some people are making millions of dollars off them. I'm not making millions of dollars, believe me. But it's sort of a new way to fill the gap that was created, as you know, Rick, over the last, 15, 20 years, right, with the decline of newspapers, the closing of so many newspapers. That this is a new way to get local news out there. And it's really been a great experience on my part. I've been so excited by the response I've gotten. I have over 2,500 subscribers, and hundreds of them voluntarily pay, which is great. So I've really been overwhelmed, as I said, by the reaction to it and the support I'm getting.
Well, let me ask the first questions first. And how do people subscribe? And what do they do to be able to get this letter? I mean, this is not a public service announcement. You're doing this to try to pay some bills here. So how do you do that? How do people get subscriptions?
Sure, they can just go to Google and search the Beverly Beat, and it pops right up, and you click on it, and then there's a button right on there where you can subscribe. You subscribe just by filling in the email and hitting subscribe. You can subscribe for free. And so that's how you do it. Now, that's all you have to do. And then every time I write a story, I'll send it out and you'll get it in your inbox, whatever email you signed up with. There's also an option to pay. Subscriptions are $7 per month or $70 per year. Most of my stories I send out free. I do put paywalls on stories, right? That's always an interesting subject in the news business, is how you make money and putting paywalls on. And I do put a paywall on some stories that can only be read by my paid subscribers. But I would say, 80% of my stories are free and open to anybody. It's this balance between trying to keep this sustainable as a business and make it worth my while, and also making the stories available to as many people as possible.
I would think that with the decline of printed newspapers and the increase in costs of subscriptions to our papers, and I've subscribed to six of them over the years, and I'm still paying through the nose for that. But I would think with all of that going on, this kind of service, the paid subscription, would be enticing to the public, because anybody who knows Paul Layton knows that you you get down and dirty, you get your fingernails dirty, you get into the story. And it would seem to me that the pay thing is good, but also obviously the free thing is awesome. But paid subscriptions, tell me more about that, Paul, in terms of you know, what you're looking for traffic, and how we can get people to do that.
Yeah, no, it's a tough one with paid subscription, and I should start by saying that I've gotten way more paid subscribers than I would have guessed. You know, I wasn't quite sure what to expect, but the response has been really great, and it's very gratifying. At the same time, and I am, you know, retired, going back to your first question, so, you know, I can quote-unquote afford to do this as a part-time job, even mm-hmm. though sometimes I put in full-time hours.
Right.
So it'd be hard for somebody who is, you know, younger and raising a family and with a mortgage and all that to just sort of leave their job and start an individual Substack covering their local community and make enough to make a full-time living. At least that's my experience. But to be honest with you, too, it's trending in that direction. If I keep it going, if it keeps going at the same rate, it's going to, you know, replicate a full-time salary, you know, which is really nice to think. And the best part about that is, you know, we've all lived in, and I lived as a local reporter for the last 20 years through the decline of newspapers and local journalism and all the cutting. And, you know, it was all very upsetting. And, you know, we didn't get raises and we lost our 401k mattress and all this stuff. You know, the journalism business has declined as much as any your industry in the country, basically. If you look at these studies, you know, there's a fraction of the number of newspapers there used to be, and especially local reporters covering, you know, communities like Gloucester and Beverly. And it used to think, geez, you know, people just don't care about local news anymore. But that's really not the case. People care about local news. They really want to read about local news. You know, it's a big question. Will they pay for local news?
Right, right.
You know? And it's because it's, in some ways, it's not, you know, their fault. In some ways, because newspapers years ago, when the web first came in and, you know, everything went online, and the basic strategy was to give it away for free. And, well, you know, you crank up your readership numbers and then you sell advertising, you know, and still make money as advertising. Under the old print model, I say old, of course it still exists, but not nearly as much. It was as much as 80 or 90% of your revenue came from advertising, you know, not from subscriptions. And so we all thought that was going to work once it went online, and that didn't work. You know, the whole story about Craigslist and Facebook mm-hmm. ads and all this stuff. And, you know, you make a fraction in advertising online, newspapers do, that they used to make with print. But anyway, people were pretty much trained to get their news for quote-unquote free. Mm. And, you know, I'm the same way. I go online and I see a story and then I hit a paywall. Well, like, am I going to pay for that story?
Right.
Am I going to sign up for this publication? You know, so I understand that. But that's, I feel like things are changing in that way, you know, from my experience. And people are starting to realize that, you know, it's like any business. When the few times people might say online, geez, you know, why do I have to pay for this story? I'm like, what other business is there where you sell a product and you don't charge any money?
It's free. No.
But people expect that. And some people even get mad. I can't believe you're charging for this story. I'm like, I don't know what else to say. I don't sell ads. I do have some t-shirts, about 20 of them, that I've given to friends and family. Maybe, Rick, I'll bring one. I can give one to you.
Oh, definitely.
But I don't sell t-shirts and, you know, the only way to make money is if people pay me for my stories. And so, you know, I might sound a little, aggravated there, but I have to keep coming back. I'm also really grateful for the reaction, and that hundreds and hundreds of people see the need for that and voluntarily pay for local news. It's a great feeling.
Well, I think the merchandising thing is not a bad idea, Paul, but I know that you got a lot on your plate. And the thing is, there's a couple of things that come to mind. I don't want to lose track of stuff here, but I found in what Bill Newell and Bill Proposka and Tim Kearns have done over the years, we have found that it's not really competition with the local newspapers. I have great respect, Paul, as you know I do, for the Salem News, the Gloucester Times, Newburyport Daily News, all of our all of our local papers, because I know how strapped they are for staffing. I know how much you worked individually and your colleagues to get stories out there, and people don't understand why there isn't more information. What, this is all you have? What about so-and-so and so-and-so? So I don't feel that, like MSO, that we were competing. There's so much of the pie out there that we can all get a piece of, and I think that's what maybe you have taken a hold on with the Beverly Beat. It's a little niche that maybe the Salem News can't quite cover all the time.
Totally. No, Rick, that's exactly it, and I'm really glad you put it that way. And I'm a total supporter of the Salem News. I work with those people. They're great people. They work so hard, and I would never, do anything to, criticize them or disparage them. I know, as you do, we know what they're up against in terms of staffing and so forth. And I think that we complement each other. I think a good example is, Beverly, all, cities and towns at this time of year has been going through the budget process, and a lot of, communities are cutting. Beverly's no exception, and I've covered, most of those meetings. But say this is an example. One of the things Beverly is cutting is their free shuttle bus service. It's actually run by Cater, based in Gloucester, I believe. So, I went to the meeting, and the Salem News reporter went to the meeting, and we wrote the meeting story. Beverly's going to cut this. It's sort of one line in the story about all the other cuts, but then the next day, and I didn't think of it till the next day, I'm like, well, what is this shuttle bus service? I've never been on it. Who rides it? Mm-hmm. I literally went down the street to one of the stops. I hopped on the bus, and I have the story if people want to look at it online. There were these two women. They were great. They met on the bus. They became friends on the bus. One of the women met her husband on the bus. They're friends with the bus driver. They helped the bus driver learn his route. So I spent an hour and a half riding through the city with these two women. And it was a great story, and if I was still at the Salem News, again, nothing against the Salem News, I wouldn't have time to do that.
Right.
So I think that's a good example of the stories I want to do. I want to get out and talk to the people. I mean, I say get out. All they have to do is get on the street,
Yeah.
Covering it up, the war in Ukraine or anything like that. It's not that hard. But those are the types of stories sort of in depth. And I'm writing more from a personal standpoint, too. I use the first person, I, which we never did mostly in our careers in journalism, and I sort of personalize things. And, as a guy who grew up in Beverly and still live in Beverly, I can write from that point of view. And people have really responded to that, too. They seem to like that voice that I have as somebody who knows the community, who knows the people, and sort of knows what's going on and can write from that perspective.
That's a great point, because it personalizes things. People know you. They see you in the community, and they see your articles in the old Beverly Times or the Salem News, and they know it's you, but you're writing from a third-person standpoint. And yet when you do this, you're able to – I haven't read all of your stuff, Paul, but I'm imagining you can put your opinion in there too.
Yeah, well, that's a good question, because I don't really give my opinion in sort of whether, I'm for this budget cut or that budget cut or this decision by the city council and mayor. It's just because I still am at my core like a news reporter. I want to report the news, objectively, for whatever that word means, objectively, and give all sides. But I can have a certain voice that steers the story in a certain direction, if that makes any sense. So it's not outright, I'm not giving my opinion. I tell people, if you want an opinion on an issue, there's this website you may have heard of called Facebook, where anybody can go find an opinion, with 500 comments on the story. I'm not into that. Everything I do is based on reporting. I go out and talk to people. I go to the meetings, I've written some, I call them my memoir type stories. I have it in a separate tab on the read. I've written about, my career and growing up in Beverly and, my father, my uncle who was killed in World War II. So there's that mix too, So it's more, I would say, point of view and voice than it is straight opinion.
Well, I wanted to talk about a couple of issues that you brought up, but I'm going to leave that for another session in terms of the actual coverage. But I do want to ask you, sort of a twofold question. What's it feel like to be your own boss, and how are you being received in the community? You know, because they know who you are as a reporter, but they also know that this is a new venture. How's that all working out?
Yeah.
And again, how's it feel to be your own boss?
Those are great questions, Rick, because the best thing about doing this, I love being my own boss. I just choose the stories I want to go to. I said to my wife, Susan, who, by the way, Susan Flynn, and she worked in newspapers for years. I met her at the old Beverly Times. She's my editor, and I couldn't do it without her being, as I always joke, my unpaid editor.
You know,
I have an editor living in the house, and so it's great. But I said, I was saying when we were talking about this, like, I don't want to go to all the city council meetings and school committee meetings. That's so time-consuming. I did that for years. I have been doing it the last few weeks because of the budget and the trafficking in Beverly, but that's for the most part. So my point being is that I pick stories that I really enjoy that are sort of different than I used to do. That one of riding the bus is a good example. And that freedom to pick and choose it feels great. It feels great. The other thing is I don't have these daily deadlines. For 40 years, I had to have a story done, you know, 3, 4, 5 days a week by 5 o'clock in the afternoon or by 10 o'clock at night if there was a night meeting. And so, I mean, I get used to that pressure, and any reporter does. That's just that's just the job, and you do it. But I don't have that anymore. If I don't have a story done by the end of the day, I just don't do it.
Right.
You know, I don't have a quote unquote space to fill. And the reaction from people is, I thought at first, well, you know, I'm going to say Paul Wheaton from the Beverly Beat. What's the Beverly Beat? But, you know, almost right away, you know, luckily, like you said, a lot of people know my name from over the years. So they pretty much, you know, they picked up on that right away and knew I had something new. But it's just, I've gotten a great reaction. I've gotten more, I tell people that, I get almost all compliments and hardly any criticism, which is really strange to me, because when you work for a newspaper, like you said, it's like, why didn't you cover this? Why didn't you cover that? There's an expectation when you have a newspaper that's been around for 140 years, like the Salem News, and you have quote-unquote pages to fill in print, and, you know, why aren't you covering this and why aren't you covering this? Now when people get one of my stories in an email, they almost consider it a bonus, and these are paid subscribers too. I had one that told me a couple weeks ago, he says, gee, you know, when I first signed up, I thought it'd be like one story a week or something. And he said, yeah, you're doing like 3 or 4. I can't believe it's really great. So it's, I mean, I've really been lucky that way. It's almost like the expectations are lower, not in terms of quality, but in terms of quantity. And people just appreciate it. It's like all love, you know. People appreciate local news now, and they tell me that. I used to tell the story, Rick, you know, you and I were both started in sports back in the day, and, you know, back in the day of, you know, Bill Kaporis and the Salem News and then the Beverly Times, and you guys were at games. It was so much coverage, and I used to cover every, you know, Beverly, you know, basketball game, for instance, for the Beverly Times. And one time the JV coach said to me, you know, why don't you cover the JVs? And that still sticks in my mind. And I almost don't blame him. It's like, yeah, that was sort of the expectation that was laid out. It was more like, what didn't you do? But I don't have that anymore, which feels great.
this is fun, Paul. And it's almost, I mean, I didn't know about Substack. I should have, but I didn't. But it's almost like you're creating a new medium for Beverly, at least, you know, and you can do some deep dives and do some personal stuff that means a lot to you, and you can get behind the scenes because you have such a great institutional knowledge background, and then you can write about it, as you say, I don't want to say at your leisure, but at your convenience.
Yes, no, that's a perfect way to put it, and I mean, when I get up in the day, it's like I'm excited to go look for a story because, again, the stories I like to do that I think are important. I mean, I would rather do this than just be, you know, quote-unquote, you know, retired and having nothing to do all day. So, I mean, I always loved my job. It just got it just got tougher and tougher as the staff got
smaller
and smaller. And the other thing is, you know, you mentioned Substack. I didn't know much about it, and you know, I researched it, and I'm follow journalism websites and podcasts and so forth. It's exciting that this is a new way. These emailed newsletters still a relatively new way of doing business. It's really helping to revive local journalism. So after all these years and like being the old guy on the beat, I'm involved in something that's kind of fresh and new, and like, you know, younger people are doing it. And when you say your newsletter to a younger people, when you say it to us, Rick, I don't know about you, I think of the one you get, you know, you pick up at the senior center or the library, you know, the paper one. But newsletters to people now, they mean these email newsletters, like the New York Times, the Boston Globe, they all have newsletters mm-hmm. you get in your inbox, and a lot of these nonprofit organizations. And this is how, so your newsletter means something a little different. And it's kind of, it's kind of at the forefront of this new way of, delivering local news.
Well, I'm learning as I go along, and it's been quite a journey. And Paul, it's, first of all, I want to thank you for this, to be a friend for so many years and support what we do and what you do. And I've learned so much over the years from you and from the other guys, too, at the papers and so on. And I want to keep this going. Before we close this out, can you maybe tease something about other things that you may have in the pipeline that you want to look at, or is it sort of a day-by-day thing?
No, I do have some stories that I'm working on. In fact, just before I came on with you, I came back from, I'm writing a story on this place in Beverly. It's called the Garden City Towers, so it's a Beverly Housing Authority building for people with low income and disabled people and elderly people. It's like the tallest building in Beverly. But the Community Preservation Committee recently authorized spending, I think it's a total of $2 million. They're putting fire sprinkler system in the building. And the fire chief wrote a letter saying this is one of the things he worries about. It's just the tallest building in the city. It was built in the 70s before mm-hmm. sprinklers were required. And so they're going to be spending all this money to put it. But I went there and I got a tour of the building, and then I just went back today and talked to some residents about what they think. Are they worried? Excellent. These are people with walkers.
All right. Don't give too much away, Paul. We're trying to tease this so people will go back to the Beverly Beach.
I just gave them. It's I have other stories lined up. What else do I have? I have been writing a lot about the budget, and Beverly, they recently raised the trash fee. Trash fee.
Yep.
Goes into effect on July 1st, and that. So there's no shortage of stories, as you know. So we'll keep it going.
All right, that's the great Paul Layton of the Beverly Beat with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore.